So we resume our meeting. We're going to have a presentation by the New Zealand Accounting Standards Board on extended external reporting, and I give the floor to David Bassett.
Thank you, Hans. In this session, I just want to share with ASAP members and IFB members some findings that came out of two surveys that were undertaken in New Zealand on extended external reporting, or what we refer to as EER. And there were quite a few findings to come out of the survey, so for the purpose of this session, I'm going to focus on those findings that might help to inform the management commentary session, or project, sorry. And I plan on just working through the slides and sort of providing some further insights along the way. And in a couple of slides' time, I'll actually define by what we meant by extended external reporting, because there's a lot of terms that are currently going around at the moment, wider corporate reporting, etc. So it'll be important to provide some context for these surveys. Once I've gone through the findings, I'd then like to update ASAP members on the current project that the external reporting board has in New Zealand on developing guidance for EER. So just to add a little bit of context, so who is the XRB? So in New Zealand, we're the organisation that's responsible for setting accounting standards, but we don't have the mandate to establish who needs to comply with our accounting standards. So these will be established through legislation or the stock exchange or regulators. The XRB has delegated its standard setting ability to the New Zealand Accounting Standards Board. So if you're wondering how the New Zealand Accounting Standards Board fits in, and there's also the New Zealand Assurance and Auditing Board, which is responsible for the assurance and auditing side of things. And the three boards are supported by the staff of the XRB. Also, too, to add some context to the current state of play in New Zealand, the requirements for contents in the annual report are currently set out in the Companies Act in New Zealand, and I think it's safe to say that there's fairly limited requirements currently. So a summary of these requirements are set out in slide four, but an observation I'd make is that we currently don't have any requirements for MD&A or management commentary for companies in New Zealand to be included in the annual report. But typically, companies do provide some type of management discussion and analysis, although I would say that the type of information that they're reporting through this MD&A typically focuses on what's already reported in the financial statements, so rather being information that would supplement or complement the information that's in the financial statements. And another observation I'd also like to make is, after the survey was undertaken, the New Zealand Stock Exchange actually came out or made changes to its corporate governance code to require listed entities, but it was on a comply or explain basis, so probably more of a recommendation, that they provide non-financial reporting information. And they then subsequently came out with a guidance note on ESG, and that guidance note made reference to some frameworks that they felt that entities should consider or have a think about when preparing this non-financial information, such as integrated reporting and GRI. So on slide five, there's the definition that was used for the purpose of these surveys for EER, and it's quite a broad definition. So essentially what it's saying is, what they considered to be EER is information that was above what was required in legislation to be included in the annual report. So it's a very broad definition. So that could capture things such as information on governance, information on the business model, right through to wider ESG information that might be more applicable to or for public policy purposes. So I think that's really important to take into consideration when you are thinking about some of the findings that came out of these surveys. So the goal of the survey, there was two goals, was to understand what the information needs are currently of users for EER, and also to understand what preparers are willing to provide. And the surveys also had three aims separate to the goal, and those aims were, one, to create more awareness in New Zealand of EER and the importance of EER, to understand what the current state of play is in New Zealand, so what's working well, what's not working so well, and also to understand what are some of the barriers to entry in the space. So not covered in the slides, but I would observe that preparers typically commented on three barriers to entry in the space, and that being they had concerns around disclosing sensitive information, which is consistent with the findings that came out on Friday with the management consultative working group. They had concerns around whether they actually had the expertise in-house to be able to gather some of this information, especially when it came to reporting on environmental type issues. And they also expressed concerns around time constraints. So if this information is to be recorded in the annual report, will they have enough time to be able to capture the information, analyse it, and then report on it before their or to meet their reporting deadlines? So I've been mentioning that there's two surveys, so I should probably explain a little bit more about the surveys. The first survey was a preparer survey. It was sent out to 277 CFOs of listed companies and also companies on the New Zealand Deloitte Top 200 Index. And of those CEOs that were invited to partake in the survey, 92 responded. In terms of the user survey was sent out to a wide range of potential users of this type of information, and it was also advertised on numerous websites such as the XRB's website and the McGuinness Institute's website, and also social media platforms such as Facebook and LinkedIn. In terms of the user surveys, 104 users responded to the survey. And I'd say also what's quite important to take into consideration when considering these findings is that this user group was a very wide user group, so much wider than what we'd say users of the primary financial statements are. This included people that could be interested in this type of information for public policy purposes, for research purposes as well. So slide 8, just if you are interested in finding a little bit more about the findings, it gives you the location for where you can find the publications that came out of the surveys. So I think if we start to get into the findings, the first finding is quite reassuring, and that is people in New Zealand are using EER information, and over 90% of people are saying that they're using this type of information to better understand the business model and to understand a company's strategies and future prospects. And also not reported, not on the shown on the slide, but also I think around 85% of people were saying that they also use this type of information to understand how the entity creates value or sustainable value. If you do have a look at the results that are shown on the slide, you'll see that there's a result that says 33% of users indicated that they'd use EER information over the next 5 years for investment decisions. And that, when I first saw that result, I was a little bit worried with that because I thought that was quite low. But when you take that into context as to who completed the survey, roughly only around 30% associated themselves as being potential investors or existing shareholders. So a lot of the respondents actually weren't making investment decisions. So when you align that 33% with the 30% of people that are making these decisions, I think it reconciles quite nicely.
David, can I just interrupt you, please? So the investors saying we use EER information. Do they include in that non-GAAP information as presented in investor packs, or are you really talking about ESG information here?
It's as broad to include that type of information as well.
Well, in that case, I'm not so surprised that the percentage is very high because they will. There is almost no investor who exclusively looks at financial statements.
Yeah. Yeah. I wonder if there is one.
Yeah.
Investor that only looks financial.
Sorry.
I wonder if there is anyone who only looks financial.
Well, 8%.
Yeah, but it's weird.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess a lot of this is just maybe potentially confirming what we may already expect.
Yeah.
So
it has some
A very devoted accountant.
But there were some people that did make comments that the reason that they might not use EER information, which may be more specific to ESG type information, is they had concerns about it biasing the good news and this comment of greenwashing. So, you know, they thought that people were looking to a lot of these disclosures to try and paint such a good picture. I think an example was given recently in one of our user forums about a petroleum company that was reporting on its emissions in its gas stations, but didn't even report on the issues and the environmental impacts on actually getting oil and gas. So, yeah, I think that draws the comment about balanced information and the importance of that in this space. So on slide 10, I think I probably need to provide a little bit of context for this slide as well. So in the survey, it asked preparers whether they currently believe that they're providing EER information or not. Now, I think actually, to Hans's question, there was a bit of interpretation as to what people felt was EER information, and certainly some of these people wouldn't have viewed that information that's reported in investor packs as EER information, where others may have, because only 60% of respondents said that they were providing EER information. And of those 60%, when asked, were you applying a current EER framework, only 23% said that they were. And I first looked at that and I thought, well, that's very low. But when I read through some of the comments, what was coming through was a lot of people were saying, no, they weren't applying an existing framework in totality, but they were looking to frameworks such as integrated reporting and GRI and pulling out different principles. So they may have answered no to this question, but in fact they are using these frameworks in some manner. Then for those that answered no to preparing or presenting EER information, they were asked what their awareness is of these existing frameworks. And you see that there's actually a large number of unawareness in the space of these frameworks. And that was quite surprising, but from drilling a little bit deeper, I do think that that's a genuine response. I would say, though, if this question was asked today after the New Zealand Stock Exchange has brought up their requirements for ESG reporting, that these numbers would be significantly lower, so awareness would actually be a lot greater. So next is slide 11, but I think maybe we have a look at slide 12 first, and that sort of, again, just confirms what we probably already expect. When asked preparers whether there should be some sort of requirements around EER reporting, preparers said that, well, if you are going to do something, that we feel that this should be voluntary. So I don't think there's any surprises there. In terms of users were a little bit more split between whether something in this space should be mandatory or on a comply or explain basis. And those that supported it being mandatory, their comments were essentially along the lines of, well, if you don't make it mandatory, then preparers aren't going to do this. And those that supported it being on a comply or explain basis was, their comments were effectively, well, let the market decide. There is demand for this. If companies aren't going to present this information, then, you know, they'll potentially be penalised. And so if we go back to slide 11 then, who's the preferred body to be establishing any requirements or guidance? I think it's probably quite pleasing for the ISB to hear that most respondents, so users and preparers, both highlighted the standard setter rather than the regulator or the accounting body or the stock exchange. And actually a comment too that I'll probably pass on to the ISB, which might be quite pleasing, is there was quite a few comments that suggested that in New Zealand, rather than developing our own guidance from scratch, is that we actually should look to an international framework to pick that up. So then we jump to slide 13. When you have a look through the findings, a message that was coming out, and I think this message also came out on Friday's consultative group meeting, was that there should be some guidance or some discussion around preparers engaging with users to better understand what users' information needs are in the space. And I think on Friday too, the discussion went a little bit further to say that this could be quite helpful in helping preparers understand or make materiality judgments as well. So that came out of the research as well. Now, slide 14, that's quite a busy slide. So if we stand back a bit and have a look at this, I think essentially what's coming out of the slide is saying that both preparers and users thought that reporting on governance was very important. They also thought that reporting on the business environment was very important. And users more than preparers, and I think that's probably not going to be a surprise, saw value in reporting on future-orientated information. Also, to an area that came out on Friday's discussion, or a concept was, in terms of a content element, was reporting on the purpose of an entity. So before you get to the business model, what's the purpose of what this entity is trying to achieve? So the findings would support those recommendations as well. And unsurprisingly as well, users sought information on the risks and opportunities. In terms of future-looking information and the performance of an entity, there was a large demand by users for reporting on goals and then an entity's, or the entity's strategies for achieving these goals, and then retrospectively, how has an entity or how does an entity do against its stated goals? So I don't think that this is quite surprising what came out of here. But again, an observation I make is when you have a look at when users were asked how well entities are currently doing, there was sort of only a majority was saying that they were doing it well. So there's definitely room for improvement there. I won't get too much into industry statistics because the surveys did ask quite a few questions around specific industry statistics and whether users felt that they would be important or not. But the observation I'd make from this was that where those users were from a sector or industry, that industry metric mattered, then they said it was important. But where they weren't, then it wasn't important. So that's unsurprising. But what I think that highlights is, again, the importance that the information that you're reporting is relevant to that entity. And then finally, on the topic of assurance, well, no surprising that there was quite a lot of support from users for EER information to be assured. And I think this goes, again, to the discussion on Friday around verifiability. But those that weren't in favour of assurance expressed concerns around the additional costs that this would incur and the capabilities of audit firms to be able to audit this information.
I'm actually surprised by the support among preparers.
You think it'll be a lot lower?
Yeah, it's more than half.
I think a comment that came out from one preparer at least was, if we're going to report on this information, we want to show that it's transparent. And I think that they made comments around the importance of transparency in here. And so they saw that audit giving credibility as to the transparency of what they were reporting.
To hide, why not get the benefit of the assurance?
But I also, also remarkable the graph on page 14 that the preparers don't seem to support or to recognize the capitals of the integrated reporting framework.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's a matter of not understanding or just not seeing the point.
I'd speculate it's probably a matter of not understanding, linking back to the awareness.
How come that the investors do understand it?
Is that lack of willingness to understand, maybe? So in terms of the XRB's project on EER, so there's a lot of demand and interest in the space in New Zealand. We have probably a three-step model at the moment in terms of our project. First, we want to provide preparers and users with resources to understand what the frameworks are out at the moment. So we are developing what we're calling a navigational tool to go through some of the more prominent frameworks and try to identify what some of the benefits of these frameworks are and when you might consider using a framework or when you might consider using a combination of frameworks. Then the second step is what we're calling developing a policy statement. And what we hope to achieve with this policy statement is to really identify or help preparers focus on what information or what types of EER information are relevant to the annual report or to users of GPFR and should be reported in the annual report, and what information is better served outside of the annual report. And I think that that position statement will also help public policy setters in understanding, you know, when should we look to try and put something in the annual report, or when is this actually better suited outside the annual report? Because a comment that came up with a discussion with the UKFRC was that, you know, these public policy setters, they don't, or often they wouldn't be typically looking to the annual report to get this type of information. So is it actually more beneficial for them, for this type of information, this public policy information, to be reported outside of the financial statements on a website where they're actually able to easily access it? And what's going in the annual report is, you know, that information that's useful to the primary users of the financial statements. And then the third step in our project will be to develop guidance for reporting EER information that is relevant to the users of the financial statements or reported in the annual report. And this third step, we'd hope to look at potentially picking up either the practice statement, the revised practice statement, or concepts in the revised practice statement. But I would say that in New Zealand, there is a lot of demand for us to move quite quickly on this. So we'd have to have some regard for the timing of the projects as well. And then finally, my last comment on the slide would be, again, going back to that opening comment I made about the XRB not being able to mandate who follows its standards. So we would need to work closely with the regulator and the Stock Exchange in New Zealand to be able to give some authoritative support or status to any resources we develop.
Okay, I open the floor. Thank you, David. Yes, Matt.
Right, thank you. Thank you, David. That's really interesting. And I think one aspect I find particularly interesting is the fact that you've put the user views and the preparer views together. And I was struck by a comment you made at the start about preparers being worried about whether they have the expertise in-house to provide this information. And then users are asking, if I look on page 9, the big thing users are asking for is information to help them to understand the strategy of the business and the prospects of the business. So there seems to be something of a disconnect there in terms of preparers not understanding what it is that users need. And I think that comes across as well in some of the some of your other slides. For example, we talked about the chart on page 14, where you have very little preparer interest in providing information on social capital. As someone who is sort of a little familiar with the integrated reporting framework, that would include information on customer retention, for example. So I think there's a language barrier here, and there's a confusion perhaps caused by some of the language being used over exactly what it is that users need.
Yeah.
Anne?
Thanks, David, for this very interesting report for us. I want to comment on slide 14 and your comment that perhaps preparers are not familiar with the capitals. Another way we could look at this data is to say, well, they could well be very familiar with them, but they choose to say that they're not important because they don't want to engage in disclosure in that area. And they know they're responding to the standard setter who's using this information to create new requirements. And there could be some major reluctance around disclosing in that area, and that there's other work that suggests that preparers are reluctant to do disclosures in this area.
Yeah, I unfortunately, we probably don't have enough information to distinguish between the two types, but I think there's probably a combination. because, again, when I look at some of these social capitals and then I look on the other side of that graph to what they're asking for, as Matt highlighted, there is a little bit of overlap too. So I think, yeah, definitely both at play.
But I could very well understand when you ask a company, would you report on social capital, that many managers have no clue what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Nick?
Thanks, David. Nice piece of work here. I'm really trying to work out how this dovetails into our work on management commentary in particular. And I go back to the Venn diagram, which lots of you have seen now. And so on one side, we have wider corporate reporting. On the other side, financial reporting. And when I think about the definition of EER and the sample set of users, is this really a survey of wider corporate reporting? And that's the angle you're approaching it from. And then when you get to that, the overlap in the Venn diagram, that's then the information that you're requiring could go into the statute or the required information. So it's almost from the other perspective from where we're starting, but ideally we meet in the same place. Is that a fair observation?
Yeah. So the research that was undertaken by the McGuinness Institute, and they're a separate organisation to the General Reporting Board, and their real focus is on undertaking research that can contribute to the future economy of New Zealand.
Mm-hmm.
And so their interest lied in that broader user group. But for the purposes of our domestic project, we're definitely focusing on, I think, I might get my left and right mixed up, but the right-hand circle. So I think in one of your recent slides, you actually had a red border around that circle, and that's what we'd consider to be the annual report.
Got it. Thank you.
Alexander?
Just a question here. In your definition of EER, it includes the MD&A, is that correct?
Yeah, it would.
So if I understand correctly, then on page maybe 9, number of users indicated over the next 5 years they expect to use EER. And only 33% say that they're going to use EER. That includes the MD&A for investment decisions. Is that correct?
Yeah, but again, I just clarify that if you look at the users, only 30% of the users that completed the or responded to the survey would actually undertake investment, would actually make investment decisions. So only 30% associated as either being potential investors or existing investors.
Yeah, that's my point, because if you talk to high-frequency trading people or other kind of quantitative guys, they not use any information at all. It's not EER or anything. They use price information only, price. So they look at past price behavior. So those guys don't use accounting information, EER information,
Nor do they fill in
these really report information. They don't use that. They don't look at firms' specific information. They get other market-only related information. So that, in that sense, that result may be misleading, because if you take a person that a buy-side investor, say that he's not going to use EER, and EER includes MD&A, so pretty much he's saying that he... That doesn't make sense. So it's important to split between more technical investors or HFT investors, high-frequency traders, and so on and so forth, with normal buy-side investors that I believe are the target of the the corporate financial reporting as a whole, because no company cares about HFT people, so you don't report to those guys, because those guys don't look at the information in the first place, you know.
I think probably our takeaway message might be the next step for us will be to undertake a survey here or research into EER with the boundaries of information that would supplement or complement the financial statements, and focus on users of the primary financial statements or users of the annual report.
Yeah, because some investors don't use any kind of intrinsic information, no matter what, no matter if they are good or bad, because they don't base an investment strategy on firms' specific information. They base on other kind of quantitative data, market prices, etc., graphical analysis. So they are not people that would be interested in the information in the first place. So to include that in the results is adds noise in my view. No?
Ilhan?
Okay. We received a few comments from the IOSS members. So we'd like to share the recent Korean regulator survey for MDNA. So research company in Korea filed business report including MDNA to regulators. So regulator in Korea issued the guidance for the business report. So this year, the regulator conducted a survey to monitor the practice of preparing MDNA in Korea. So the survey revealed that although MDNA is included in the business report, the average portion of MDNA within the business report is only 2.7%. So preparers tend to simply repeat the same financial information in the MDNA that are already reported in the financial statements. And also, preparers responded, strengthening the requirement of disclosure in MDNA is unnecessary or difficult to follow.
Okay, thank you. Linda?
Thanks. So we found this paper particularly interesting because of the work that we've been doing over the last 3 or 4 months on our framework on performance measures. We've been doing the outreach on that project. We looked at it from that lens. Now, understand there's not a perfect overlap, but it's not exactly the same population. By that I mean our framework is focused on any type of measure that is out there and available and could be used. And in particular, when we were looking at what you're calling EER, there seemed to be a correlation between that, and maybe they were just getting it mixed up with ESG. But the notion that the extended reporting you were talking about was more in the kind of environmental and social impact stuff as opposed to the broader perspective of our framework. So just keep that in mind in terms of, you know, what we observed. So we observed some similarities, one of which was whether or not conversations were going on between users and preparers. And so if you're in our marketplace, you have relatively a smaller number of more sophisticated companies, and then you drop down to the vast majority, 90% plus of the listed entities that are smaller in size and less sophisticated. And so what we found is in the more sophisticated companies, the conversations between users and preparers are happening all the time. And there's a demand loop where the users are saying they need something, and if it's systematic enough in an industry, then the companies tend to come up with it, okay? Whereas when you drop down, there's much less of that happening. In fact, when you ask users, do you actually go ask for the information? They say they really don't have a good mechanism for doing that. And they assume that the preparer should be coming to them and asking them what they need. So that would be something we observe. The other thing we noticed was in the slide about who people would prefer to have do the guidance. We found the reaction to our framework was that people are paying attention to it because the standard setter did it. And what's interesting about that is if you look at our framework, there's a lot of stuff that we incorporated in the framework from a content perspective that wasn't new information. So, for instance, the Association for the Professionals in Canada, CPA Canada, has guidance out there about non-GAAP or other things, but because we put similar stuff in our framework, suddenly people were paying more attention to it because it was the standard setter. So I think that's similar to what you saw in terms of that particular output. The other thing that was very clear was around the expectations gap. What we call the expectations gap is people didn't understand what was audited and what was not audited, and a bit more on the user side saying, well, we think more should be audited. Which is similar to what you noticed. So, I mean, there's a lot of other things. I think the other thing that's different between New Zealand and Canada is that right now there's no requirement for companies to do what the users were thinking of as that environmental ESG, what we would call ESG. And users in general felt that should remain voluntary, whereas you've got some requirement for it. I mean, there's other things that I could draw out, but in essence, we did notice some very common themes between what you learned from your survey and what we're learning from our outreach on our performance measures, which is quite interesting, and the fact that this is a very important topic for standard setters right now.
Andrew?
Thanks. Well, many thanks for the survey and the presentation, David. Very interesting. sure you know the regulatory landscape in Europe, and I think the extent to which the various voluntary frameworks have been influential in practice is quite different. But that's all on the record, on the public record. I don't need to elaborate. I just had a couple of questions, kind of a narrow question and a broader one. On slide 12, I was intrigued that in terms of this voluntary or mandatory question, the most popular answer for users was comply or explain, which for disclosure is quite familiar, certainly in a UK context, in terms of corporate governance requirements, how companies organise themselves. But in terms of disclosure, it seems to suggest that you'd either disclose something or make a disclosure saying why you haven't disclosed it, which I found kind of curious. So maybe you could elaborate on that. And I thought the focus here, if I'm understanding it well, is on the question of who should the audience be for extended or wider corporate reporting. The focus was on the primary user, the same user group as defined in the conceptual framework, the primary users of financial statements. But there is a kind of ongoing debate or differences of view in Europe on whether we should be thinking more about the needs of wider society. So I just wondered if you had any views on that in a New Zealand context.
Okay. I'll start with that question first. There are definitely different views in New Zealand, but I think once you start to extend beyond, say, the primary use of the financial statements, the scope and the difficulties of developing anything exacerbate extensionally. I think at least our board had decided that for the immediate term, let's focus on the primary users of GPFR and those wider EER information for public policy purposes might be better served outside of the financial statements. In regard to the comply or explain basis, I've recently been having a look since the new changes for listed companies have come in, and actually overwhelmingly most listed companies have applied some sort of EER framework for reporting ESG information, and I haven't actually come across an example of an entity that hasn't done anything and has gone with we haven't complied with this. So it seems to be an effective way of requiring this type of disclosure. But I guess that the concerns were that if you did mandate something from the onset, could this potentially be a burden for some entities that, at this point, say, for example, a startup, this is too early for them to start to be considering this type of information. But at least what I've observed so far is that most people have complied.
Tom?
It said that 30% of the users were investors, and then you made that link to who used it for which purpose. Were you able to identify what the investors reported on each question, or did you just know the overall?
Just the overall. Okay. So that's
Ross?
So I appreciate your presentation. At the FASB, we don't actually have the authority to set MD&A for public companies, nor to do disclosures as it relates to ESG. For public companies, that resides with the U.S. government through the Securities Exchange Commission. We could do it for not-profits or private companies. We did an extensive amount of analysis for the not-for-profit community and concluded that it should be a market-based approach, and went back to encourage the not-for-profit community to work with the AICPA to come up with best practices. Just because we didn't feel that there needed to be a mandated standards level or requirement for not-for-profits. We observe various initiatives in this area to just learn from it and see if there are certain things that should be done from actual financial accounting disclosures. But as far as broader corporate reporting, that resides with the U.S. government, so we don't get involved in it.
Noble.
Yes, thank you. We are in a very similar situation as to the United States. We don't have the mandate to prescribe any EER requirements. Having said that, we are very interested in your first phase of your project, which is to try to identify the differences between the frameworks that exist today, and we will be looking forward to seeing that come out. Yeah.
We don't even have the mandate to prescribe accounting standards. You still work on it. Okay. Thank you very much, David. It was very useful, especially for our project.